Chapter 29. A Cup of Sleep. "Don't be an utter woolhead, Rand," Min said. Making herself remain seated, she crossed her legs and kicked her foot idly, but she could not keep exasperation out of her voice. "Go to her, speak to her." "Why?" he snapped. "I know which letter to believe now. It's better this way. She's safe now, from anyone who wants to strike at me. Safe from me. It's better." But he stalked up and down in his shirt sleeves between the two rows of chairs in front of the dragon throne, his fists white-knuckle hard, glaring to beat the black clouds beyond the casements that were laying a new blanket of snow on Kyrian. Min exchanged looks with Fedwin Moore, who stood by the sun-carved doors. The maidens now let anyone who was not an obvious threat walk in unannounced, but those Rand did not want to see this morning would be turned away by the husky boy. He wore the dragon and sword on his black collar, and Min knew he had already seen more battles, more horror than most men three times his age, yet he was a boy. Today, casting uneasy glances at Rand, he seemed younger than ever. The sword on his hip still looked out of place to her. "The dragon reborn is a man, Fedwin," she said. "And like any man, he's sulking because he thinks a woman doesn't want to see him again." Goggling, the boy jerked as if she had goosed him. Rand stopped to scowl at her sullenly. All that kept her from laughing was knowing that he was hiding pain as real as any stab wound. That and the sure knowledge that he would be as hurt if she had done what had been done. Not that she would ever have the chance to rip down his banners, but the point applied. Rand had been stunned at first by the news Taim brought from Camelin at dawn, but as soon as the man left he had stopped looking like a pole-axed bull and started this. Standing, she adjusted her pale green coat, folded her arms beneath her breasts, and confronted him directly. "What else can it be?" she asked calmly. Well, she tried for calm and almost made it. She loved the man, but after a morning of this she wanted to box his ears soundly. "You haven't mentioned Matt twice, and you don't know whether he's even alive."
"Matt's alive," Rand snarled. "I'd know if he was dead. What do you mean, I'm—"
His jaw clenched as if he could not make himself say the word. "Sulking," she provided. "Soon you'll be pouting. Some women think men are prettier when they pout. I'm not one of them." Well, enough of that. His face had darkened, and he was not blushing. "Haven't you twisted yourself into knots to make sure she got the throne of Andor? Which is hers by right, might I add. Didn't you say you wanted her to have Andor whole, not ripped apart like Kyrian or Tyr?"
"I did," he roared. "And now it's hers and she wants me out of it. Good enough, I say. And don't tell me again to stop shouting. I'm not—"
He realized that he was, and clamped his teeth shut. A low growl came from his throat. Moore set to studying one of his buttons, twisting it back and forth. He had been doing a lot of that this morning. Min kept her face smooth. She was not going to slap him, and he was too big for her to spank. "Andor is hers just as you wanted," she said, calmly, almost. "None of the Forsaken are going after her now she's torn your banners down." A dangerous light appeared in those blue-gray eyes, but she pressed on. "Just as you wanted, and you can't believe she's siding with your enemies. Andor will follow the Dragon Reborn, and you know it. So the only reason for you to be in a snit is because you think she doesn't want to see you. Go to her, you fool." The next part was the hardest to say. "Before you can say two words, she'll be kissing you." Light. She loved Elaine almost as much as she did Rand. Maybe as much in a very different way. But how was a woman to compete with a beautiful golden-haired queen who had a powerful nation at her beck and call?
"I am not angry," Rand said in a tight voice, and started pacing again.
Min considered kicking him square in the bottom, hard. One of the doors opened to admit leathery, white-haired Sorrelia, who brushed Moore aside even as he was looking to see whether Rand wanted her allowed entry. Rand opened his mouth, angrily, whatever he chose to claim, and five women in thick black robes damp with melted snow followed the wise one into the room, hands folded, eyes down, and deep hoods not quite hiding their faces.
Their feet were wrapped in rags. Min's scalp prickled. To her eyes, images and auras danced and vanished and were replaced around all six women, just as around Rand. She had been hoping he had forgotten those five were alive. What in the name of the light was that wicked old woman doing? Sorilea gestured once in a clatter of gold and ivory bracelets, and the five hastily arranged themselves in a line atop the golden rising sun set in the stone floor. Rand strode along that row, stripping back hoods, baring faces that he stared into cold-eyed. Every one of the black-robed women was unwashed, her hair lank and dirty with sweat. Elza Penfell, a green sister, met his gaze eagerly, a strangely fervent look on her face. Nasoon Bihara, a slender brown, studied him as intently as he did her. Serene Nemdal, so beautiful even in her dirt that you thought her agelessness must be natural, appeared to be holding to her white Aja coolness by a fingernail. Beldine Nyram, too new to the shawl to have the ageless features, essayed an uncertain smile that melted under his stare. Arian Borroleus, pale and almost as lovely as Serene, flinched, then visibly forced herself to look into that frigid gaze. Those last two also were green, and all five had been among the sisters who kidnapped him on Elida's orders. Some had been among those who tortured him while trying to carry him to Tar Valon. Sometimes Rand still woke, sweating and panting, mumbling about being confined, being beaten. Min hoped she did not see murder in his stare.
"These were named Datsang, Randall Thor," Sorilea said. "I think they feel their shame in the bone now. Arian Borroleus was the first to ask to be beaten as you were, sunrise and sunset, but now each has done so. That plea has been granted. Each has asked to serve you however she may. The To for their betrayal cannot be met." Her voice darkened for a moment. To the Aiel, the betrayal of the kidnapping was far worse than what they had done after. Yet they know their shame and they wish to try. We have decided to leave the choice to you.
Min frowned. Leave the choice to him? Wise ones rarely left any choice they could make to anyone else. Sorilea never did. The sinewy wise one casually shifted her dark shawl on her shoulders and watched Rand, as if this was of no importance at all. But she shot one blue-ice glance at Min, and suddenly Min was sure that if she said the wrong thing here, that bony old woman would have her hide. It was not a viewing. She just knew Sorilea better than she wanted to by now. Determinedly she set to studying what was appearing and vanishing around the women. No easy task when they stood so close together she could not be certain whether a particular image belonged to one woman or the woman next to her. At least the auras were always certain. Light. Let her be able to understand at least some of what she saw. Rand took Soralia's announcement coolly, on the surface. He rubbed his hands together slowly, then thoughtfully examined the herons branded on his palms. He examined each of those Aes Sedai faces in turn. Finally, he focused on Arian.
"Why?" he asked her in a mild voice. "I killed two of your warders." "Why?"
Min winced. Rand was many things, but seldom mild, and Arian was one of the few who had beaten him more than once. The pale Ilianer sister straightened. Images danced, and auras flashed and were gone. Nothing Min could read. Dirty-faced and her long black hair matted, Arian gathered Aes Sedai authority around her and met his gaze levelly. But her answer came simply and directly. "We did be wrong in taking you. I have considered long on it. You must fight the last battle and we must help you. If you will know, accept me, I do understand, but I will help as you do require if you will allow." Rand stared at her without expression. He put that same one-word question to each, and their answers were as different as the women. "The green is the battle, Aja," Beldine told him proudly, and despite smudges on her cheeks and dark circles beneath her eyes, she did look a queen of battles. But then Saldaean women seemed to find that second nature. When you go to Tarmangaiden, the green must be there. I will follow, if you will accept me.
Light! She was going to bond an Ashaman as a warder. How?
No, it was not important now.
What we did was logical at the time.
Serene's tightly held, cool serenity slipped into clear worry, and she shook her head.
I say that to explain, not to exculpate. Circumstances have changed. For you, the logical course might seem to...
She drew a decidedly unsteady breath. Images and auras. A tempestuous love affair of all things. The woman was ice, however beautiful, and there was nothing useful in knowing some man would melt her.
To send us back to captivity, she went on, or even execute us. For me, logic says I must serve you.
Nassoon tilted her head, and her nearly black eyes seemed to be trying to store away every scrap of him. One red and green aura spoke of honors and fame. A huge building appeared above her head and vanished, a library she would found.
I want to study you, she said simply. I can hardly do that carrying stones or digging holes. They do leave plenty of time for thought, but serving you seems a fair exchange for what I might learn.
Rand blinked at the directness of that, but otherwise his expression did not alter. The most surprising answer came from Elsa, in her manner of delivery more than the words. Sinking to her knees, she gazed up at Rand with feverish eyes. Her whole face seemed to shine with fervor. Auras flared and images cascaded around her, telling nothing.
"You are the Dragon Reborn," she said breathlessly. "You must be there for the last battle. I must help you be there. Whatever is necessary, I will do."
And she flung herself face down, pressing her lips to the polished stone floor in front of his boots. Even Sorrelia looked taken aback, and Serene's mouth dropped open. Moore gaped at her and hastily returned to twisting his button. Min thought he giggled nervously, almost under his breath. Turning on his heel, Rand stalked halfway to the dragon throne, where his scepter and the crown of Ilion rested atop his gold-embroidered red coat. His face was so bleak that Min wanted to rush to him, no matter who was watching, but she continued to study the Aes Sedai. And Sorrelia. She had never seen anything really useful around that white-haired harridan. Abruptly, Rand turned back, striding toward the line of women so quickly that Beldine and Serene stepped back. A sharp gesture from Sorrelia jerked them into place again.
"Would you accept being confined in a box?"
His voice grated, stone grinding on frozen stone.
"Locked in a chest all day, and beaten before you go in and when you come out?"
That was what they had done to him.
"Yes," Elsa moaned against the floor. "Whatever I must do, I will." "If you do require it,"
Arian managed shakily, and faces aghast, the others nodded slowly. Min stared in amazement, knotting her fists in her coat pockets. That he might think of getting his own back in the same manner seemed almost natural, but she had to stop it somehow. She knew him better than he did himself. She knew where he was hard as a knife blade, and where he was vulnerable no matter how he denied it. He would never forgive himself this. But how? Fury contorted his face, and he shook his head as he did when arguing with that voice he heard. He muttered one word aloud that she understood. Taviran. Sorrelia stood there calmly examining him as closely as Nassoon did. Not even the threat of the chest shook the brown. Except for Elsa, still moaning and kissing the floor, the others were hollow-eyed, as if seeing themselves doubled up and bound as he had been. Among all of those images spilling around Rand and the women, suddenly an aura flashed, blue and yellow tinged with green, encompassing them all, and Min knew its meaning. She gasped, half in surprise, half in relief.
"They will serve you, each in her fashion, Rand," she said hurriedly. "I saw it."
Sorrelia would serve him? Suddenly Min wondered exactly what "in her fashion" meant. The words came with the knowing, but she did not always know what the words themselves meant. But they would serve. That much was plain. The fury drained from Rand's face as he silently studied the Aes Sedai. Some of them glanced at Min with raised eyebrows, obviously marveling that a few words from her carried so much weight, but for the most part they watched Rand and hardly seemed to breathe. Even Elsa lifted her head to gaze up at him. Sorrelia gave Min one quick look and the faintest nod. Approving, Min thought. So the old woman pretended not to care one way or the other, did she? At last Rand spoke. You can swear to me as Kiruna and the others did. That or go back to wherever the wise ones have been keeping you. I'll accept nothing less. Despite a hint of demand in his voice, he looked as if he too did not care, arms folded, eyes impatient. The oath he demanded of them came out in a rush. Min did not expect quibbles, not after her viewing, yet it was still a surprise when Elsa scrambled up to her knees and the others lowered themselves to theirs. In ragged unison, five more Aes Sedai swore under the light and by their hope of salvation to serve the Dragon Reborn faithfully until the last battle had come and gone. Nassoon delivered the words as though examining each one, serene as if stating a principle of logic. Elsa wearing a wide, victorious smile, but they all swore. How many Aes Sedai would he gather around him? With the oath, Rand seemed to lose interest. Find them clothes and put them with your other apprentices, he told Sorrelia absently. He was frowning, but not at her or the Aes Sedai. How many do you think you'll end up with? Min almost jumped at the echo of her own thought. However many are necessary, Sorrelia said dryly. I think more will come. She clapped her hands once and gestured, and the five sisters sprang to their feet. Only Nassoon looked surprised at the alacrity with which they had obeyed. Sorrelia smiled, a very satisfied smile for an Aiel, and Min did not think it was caused by the other women's obedience. Nodding, Rand turned away. He was already beginning to pace again, already beginning to scowl over Elaine. Min settled into her chair once more, wishing she had one of Master Fell's books to read. Or to throw at Rand. Well, one of Master Fell's to read and someone else's to throw. Sorrelia herded the black-clad sisters out of the room, but at the last she paused with one hand holding a door and looked back at Rand striding away from her toward the gilded throne. Her lips pursed thoughtfully. That woman, Cadswain Melaidrin, is beneath this roof again today, she said at last to his back. I think she believes you are afraid of her, Randall Thor, the way you avoid her whereabouts. With that she left. For a long moment Rand stood staring at the throne, or maybe at something beyond it. Abruptly he gave himself a shake and strode the remaining distance to pick up the crown of swords. On the point of setting it on his head, though, he hesitated, then put it back. Donning the coat, he left crown and scepter where they lay. I mean to find out what Cadswain wants, he announced. She doesn't come to the palace every day because she likes a trip through the snow. Will you come with me, Min? Maybe you'll have a viewing. She was on her feet faster than any of those Aes Sedai. A visit with Cadswain would likely be as pleasurable as a visit with Sorrelia, yet anything was better than sitting there alone. Besides, maybe she would have a viewing. Fedwin fell in behind her and Rand with an alert look in his eyes. The six maidens outside in the tall, vaulted hallway rose, but they did not follow. Somara was the only one Min knew. She gave Min a brief smile, and Rand a flat, disapproving stare. The others glowered. The maidens had accepted his explanation about why he had gone without them in the first place, so any watchers would believe for as long as possible that he was still in Cairhien. But they still demanded to know why he had not sent for them afterward, and Rand had had no answers. He muttered something under his breath and quickened his pace, so Min had to stretch her legs to keep up. "Watch Cadswain carefully, Min," he said, "and you too, Moore. She's up to some Aes Sedai scheme, but burn me if I can see what. I don't know. There's..." A stone wall seemed to strike Min from behind. She thought she heard roaring. crashing. And then Rand was turning her over. She was lying on the floor, looking down at her with the first fear she remembered seeing in those morning blue eyes. It only faded when she sat up, coughing. The air was full of dust. And then she saw the corridor. The maidens were gone from in front of Rand's doors. The doors themselves were gone, along with most of the wall, and a jagged hole nearly as big gaped in the wall opposite. She could see into his apartments clearly, despite the dust, into devastation. Massive piles of rubble lay everywhere, and above, the ceiling yawned open to the sky. Snow swirled down onto flames dancing among the rubble. One of the massive blackwood posts of his bed stuck burning out of shattered stone, and she realized she could see all the way outside to the step towers veiled by the snowfall. It was as if a huge hammer had smashed into the Sun Palace. And had they been in there, instead of going to see Cadswain? Min shivered. "What?" she began unsteadily, then abandoned the useless question. Any fool would see what had happened. "Who?" she asked instead. Covered in dust, hair every which way, and with tears in their coats, the two men looked as if they'd been rolled along the corridor, and perhaps they had. She thought they were all a good 10 paces farther from the doors than she remembered. From where the doors had been. In the distance, anxious shouts rose, echoing along the halls. Neither man answered her.
"Can I trust you more?" Rand asked.
Fedwin met his gaze openly.
"With your life, my Lord Dragon," he said simply.
"That's what I am trusting you with," Rand said.
His fingers brushed her cheek, and then he stood abruptly.
"Guard her with your life, Moore."
Hard as steel, his voice. Grim as death.
"If they're still in the palace, they'll feel you try to make a gateway and strike before you can finish. Don't channel at all unless you must, but be ready. Take her down to the servants' quarters, and kill anyone or anything that tries to get to her. Anyone."
With a last look down at her, oh, light, any other time she would have thought she could die happily seeing that look in his eyes. He went running, away from the ruination, away from her. Whoever had tried to kill him would be hunting for him.
Moore patted her on the arm with a dusty hand and gave her a boyish grin. "Don't worry, Min. I'll take care of you."
But who was going to take care of Rand?
"Can I trust you?" he had asked this boy who had been one of the first to come asking to learn.
Light. Who would make him safe?
Rounding a corner, Rand stopped with a hand against one wall to seize the source. A fool thing, not wanting Min to see him stagger when someone tried to kill him. But there it was. Not just any someone. A man, Demondred, or perhaps Osmodian, come back at last. Maybe both. There had been an oddity, as if the weaving came from different directions. He had felt the channeling too late to do anything. He would have died in his rooms. He was ready to die. But not Min. No, not Min. Elaine was better off, turning against him. Oh, light she was. He seized the source, and Sidene flooded him with molten cold and freezing heat, with life and sweetness, filth and death. His stomach twisted, and the hallway in front of him doubled itself. For an instant, he thought he saw a face. Not with his eyes, in his head. A man, shimmering and unrecognizable, gone. He floated in the void, empty and full of the power. "You won't win," he told Luce Theron. "If I die, I'll die me." "I should have sent Ilyena away," Luce Theron whispered back. "She would have lived." Pushing the voice away as he pushed himself from the wall, Rand slipped along the palace corridors with all the stealth he could muster, stepping lightly, gliding close to tapestry-hung walls, around gold-worked chests and gilded cabinets bearing fragile golden porcelains and ivory statuettes. His eyes searched for his attackers. They would not be satisfied short of finding his body, but they would be very careful in approaching his rooms in case he had survived by some Taviran swirl of fate. They would wait to see whether he stirred. In the void, he was as near one with the power as any man could live through. In the void, as with a sword, he was one with his surroundings. Frantic shouts and clamor rose in every direction, some screaming to know what had happened, others crying that the dragon reborn had gone mad. The bundle of frustration in his head that was Alana provided one small comfort. She was out of the palace, as she had been all morning, maybe even outside the city walls. He wished Min was, too. Sometimes he saw men and women down one hallway or another, black liveried servants mainly, running, falling down, and scrambling up to run again. They did not see him. With the power in him, he could hear every whisper, including the whisper of soft boots running, light-footed. Backing against the wall beside a long table topped with porcelain, he quickly wove fire and air around himself and held very still, wrapped in folded light. Maidens appeared, a stream of them, veiled, and ran by without seeing him, toward his apartments. He could not let them accompany him. He had promised but to let them fight, not to lead them to slaughter. When he found Demondred and Asmodian, all the maidens could do was die. And he already had 5 names to learn and add to his list. Sumara of the Bent Peak Darain was already there. A promise he had to make, a promise he had to keep. For that promise alone, he deserved to die.
"Eagles and women can only be kept safe in cages," Luz Theron said, as though quoting, then abruptly began weeping as the last of the maidens vanished.
Rand moved on, sweeping back and forth through the palace in arcs that slowly moved away from his apartments. Folded light used very little of the power, so little no man could have felt the use of Psydeen unless right on top of it. And he used it whenever anyone seemed about to see him. His attackers had not struck at his rooms on the chance he would be there. They had eyes and ears in the palace. Maybe it had been Taviran work that pulled him out of the apartments, if a Taviran could work on himself, and maybe just happenstance. But perhaps his tugging at the pattern could bring his attackers within his grasp while they thought him dead or injured. Luz Theron chuckled at the thought. Rand could almost feel the man rubbing his hands in anticipation. 3 more times he had to hide behind the power as veiled maidens rushed by, and once when he saw Kedswain sweeping along the corridor ahead with no fewer than 6 Aes Sedai at her heels, and not one other that he recognized besides her. They seemed to be hunting. He was not afraid of the gray-haired sister precisely. No, of course not afraid. But he waited until she and her friends were well out of sight before letting his concealing weave go. Luz Theron did not chuckle over Kedswain. He was deathly silent until she was gone. Rand stepped away from the wall. A door opened right beside him, and Ailill peeked out. He had not known he was near her rooms. Behind her shoulder stood a dark woman with fat golden rings in her ears, and a medallion-filled golden chain running across her left cheek to her nose ring. Shallan, windfinder to Harin Din Togara, the Athaan Mier ambassador, who had moved into the palace with her retinue almost as Mirana informed him of the agreement, and meeting with a woman who might want him dead. Their eyes popped at the sight of him. He was as gentle as he could be, but he had to be quick. A few moments after the door opened, he was tucking a somewhat rumpled Ailill beneath her bed alongside Shallan. Perhaps they were not part of what was happening. Perhaps. Safe was better than sorry. Glaring at him above mouths wadded full of Ailill's scarves, the 2 women writhed against the torn strips of bedsheet he had used to bind their wrists and ankles. The shield he had tied off on Shallan would hold her for a day or 2 before the knot unraveled, but someone would find them and cut their other bonds before too much longer. Worrying about that shield, he opened the door enough to check the hallway and hurried out along the empty corridor. He could not have left the Windfinder free to channel, but shielding a woman was not a matter of dribbles of the power. If one of his attackers had been close enough, but he saw no one down any of the crossing corridors either. 50 paces beyond Ailill's rooms, the corridor opened into a square-railed balcony of blue marble, with broad stairs at either end, fronting a square chamber with a high vaulted ceiling, and the same sort of balcony at the other side. Tapestries 10 paces long hung along the walls, birds soaring to the skies in rigid patterns. Below, Dashiva stood looking about, licking his lips uncertainly. Gedwin and Rochide were with him. Luz Theron chittered of killing.
"Telling you I felt nothing," Gedwin was saying. "He's dead."
and Ashiva saw Rand at the head of the stairs. The only warning he had was the sudden snarl that contorted Dashiva's face. Dashiva channeled, and with no time to think, Rand wove, as so often he did not know what, something dredged from Luz Theron's memories. He was not even sure he created the weave entirely himself, or whether Luz Theron snatched at Sidene. Air and fire and earth woven around himself just so. The fire that leaped from Dashiva erupted, shattering marble, flinging Rand back down the hallway, bounding and rolling in his cocoon. That barrier would keep out anything short of balefire, including air to breathe. Rand released it panting, scraping along the floor, with the crash of the explosions still ringing in the air, dust still hanging and bits of broken marble tumbling. As much as for breath, though, he let it go because what could keep the power out kept it in. Before he stopped sliding, he channeled fire and air, but woven much differently than for folded light. Thin red wires leaped from his left hand, fanning out as they sliced through the intervening stone toward where Dashiva and the others had been standing. From his left sped balls of flame, fire woven with air, faster than he could count, and they burned through the stone before exploding in that chamber. One continuous, deafening roar made the palace tremble. Dust that had fallen rose up again, and pieces of stone bounced. Almost immediately, though, he was up and running, back past Ailill's apartments. The man who struck and stayed in one spot was asking to die. He was ready to die, but not yet. Snarling soundlessly, he sped down another hall, descended narrow servants' stairs, and came out on the floor below. He took care, making his way back to where he had seen Dashiva, deadly weaves ready to fling at so much as a glimpse.
"I should have killed them all in the beginning," Luz Theron panted. "I should have killed them all."
Rand let him rage. The large chamber seemed to have been washed in fire. Only charred fragments, licked by flames, remained of the tapestries, and great gouges of pace across had been burned into the floor and walls. The stairs Rand had been about to descend ended in a 10-foot gap halfway down. Of the three men, there was no sign. They would not have been consumed completely. Something would have remained. A servant in a black coat cautiously poked his head from a tiny door beside the stairs on the other side of the chamber. His eyes fell on Rand and rolled up in his head, and he fell forward in a heap. Another servant peeped out of a corridor, then gathered her skirts and raced back the way she had come, shrieking at the top of her lungs that the dragon reborn was killing everyone in the palace. Rand slipped out of the chamber, grimacing. He was very good at frightening people who could not harm him. Very good at destroying.
"To destroy or be destroyed," Luz Theron laughed. "When that's your choice, is there a difference?"
Somewhere in the palace, a man channeled enough of the power to make a gateway. Dashiva and the others fleeing, or wanting him to think that. He walked the corridors of the palace, no longer bothering to hide. Everyone else seemed to be. The few servants he saw fled screaming. Corridor after corridor he hunted, filled near to bursting with Sidene, full of fire and ice trying to annihilate him as surely as Dashiva had, full of the taint worming its way into his soul. He had no need of Luz Theron's ragged laughter and ravings to be filled with the desire to kill. A glimpse of a black coat ahead, and his hand shot up, fire streaking, exploding, tearing away the corner where the two hallways met. Rand let the weave subside, but did not let go. Had he killed him?
"My lord dragon!"
a voice shouted from beyond the torn stonework.
"It's me! Narishma! And Flynn!"
"I didn't recognize you," Rand lied. "Come here."
"I think maybe your blood's hot,"
Flynn's voice called.
"I think maybe we should wait for everybody to cool down."
"Yes," Rand said slowly.
Had he really tried to kill Narishma? He did not think he could claim the excuse of Luz Theron.
"Yes, that might be best. For a little while longer."
There was no answer. Did he hear boots retreating? He forced his hands down and turned another way. He searched through the palace for hours without finding a sign of Dashiva or the others. The corridors and great halls, even the kitchens, were empty of people. He found nothing and learned nothing. No, he realized that he had learned one thing. trust was a knife, and the hilt was as sharp as the blade. Then he found pain.
The small stone-walled room was deep below the Sun Palace and warm despite the lack of a fireplace, but Min felt cold. Three gilded lamps on the tiny wooden table gave more than enough light. Rand had said that from there he could get her away even if someone tried to root the palace out of the ground. He had not sounded as if he were joking. Holding the crown of Ilion on her lap, she watched Rand. Watched Rand watching Fedwin. Her hands tightened on the crown and loosened immediately at the stabs of those small swords hidden among the laurel leaves. Strange that the crown and scepter should have survived when the dragon throne itself was a pile of gilded splinters buried in rubble. A large leather scrip beside her chair with Rand's sword belt and scabbarded sword resting against it held what else he had been able to salvage. Strange choices for the most part in her estimation. You brainless looby, she thought. Not thinking about what's right in front of you won't make it go away. Rand sat cross-legged on the bare stone floor, still covered in dust and scratches, his coat torn. His face might have been carved. He seemed to watch Fedwin without blinking. The boy was sitting on the floor, too, his legs sprawled out. Tongue caught between his teeth, Fedwin was concentrating on making a tower out of blocks of wood. Min swallowed hard. She could still remember the horror when she realized the boy guarding her now had the mind of a small child. The sadness remained, too. Liked he was only a boy. It was not right. But she hoped Rand still had him shielded. It had not been easy, talking Fedwin into playing with those wooden blocks instead of pulling stones out of the walls with the power to make a big tower to keep you safe in. And then she had sat guarding him until Rand came. Oh, Light, she wanted to cry. For Rand even more than Fedwin.
You hide yourself in the depths, it appears.
The deep voice was not finished speaking from the doorway before Rand was on his feet, facing Mazrim Taim. As usual, the hook-nosed man wore a black coat with blue and gold dragons spiraling up the arms. Unlike the other Ashaman, he had neither sword nor dragon on his high collar. His dark face wore nearly as little expression as Rand's. Now, staring at Taim, Rand seemed to be gritting his teeth. Min surreptitiously eased a knife in her coat sleeve. As many images and auras danced around one as the other, but it was not a viewing that made her suddenly wary. She had seen a man trying to decide whether to kill another before, and she was seeing it again.
You come here holding Saidin, Taim? Rand said, much too softly.
Taim spread his hands, and Rand said, That's better. But he did not relax.
It was just that I thought I might be stabbed by accident, Taim said, making my way here through corridors packed with those Aiel women. They seem agitated.
His eyes never left Rand, but Min was sure he had noticed her touching her knife.
Understandably, of course, he went on smoothly. I cannot express my joy at finding you alive after seeing what I did above. I came to report deserters. Normally I wouldn't have bothered, but these are Gedwin, Rochade, Torval, and Kisman. It seems they were malcontented over events in Altara, but I never thought they would go this far. I haven't seen any of the men I left with you.
For an instant his gaze flickered to Fedwin, for no more than an instant.
There were other casualties. I will take this one with me if you wish. I told them to stay out of sight, Rand said in a harsh voice. And I'll take care of Fedwin. Fedwin Moore, Taim, not this one.
He actually backed to the small table to pick up the silver cup sitting among the lamps. Min's breath caught.
The wisdom in my village could cure anything, Rand said as he knelt beside Fedwin.
Somehow he managed to smile at the boy without taking his eyes from Taim. Fedwin smiled back happily and tried to take the cup, but Rand held it for him to drink.
She knows more about herbs than anybody I've ever met. I learned a little from her. Which are safe, which not.
Fedwin sighed as Rand took the cup away and held the boy to his chest.
"Sleep, Fedwin," Rand murmured.
It did seem that the boy was going to sleep. His eyes closed. His chest rose and fell more slowly, slower, until it stopped. The smile never left his lips.
"A little something in the wine," Rand said softly as he laid Fedwin down.
Min's eyes burned, but she would not cry. She would not.
"You are harder than I thought," Taim muttered.
Rand smiled at him, a hard, feral smile.
"Add Korlan Dashiva to your list of deserters, Taim. Next time I visit the Black Tower, I expect to see his head on your traitor's tree."
"Dashiva?" Taim snarled, his eyes widening in surprise.
"It will be as you say. When next you visit the Black Tower?"
That quickly he recovered himself, all polished stone and poise once more. How she wished she could read her viewings of him.
"Return to the Black Tower and don't come here again."
Standing, Rand faced the other man over Fedwin's body.
"I may be moving about for a while."
Taim's bow was minuscule.
"As you command."
As the door closed behind him, Min let out a long breath.
"No point wasting time and no time to waste," Rand muttered.
Kneeling in front of her, he took the crown and slipped it into the scrip with the other things.
"Min, I thought I was the whole pack of hounds chasing down one wolf after another, but it seems I'm the wolf."
"Burn you," she breathed. Tangling both hands in his hair, she stared into his eyes. Now blue, now gray, a morning sky just at sunrise, and dry.
"You can cry, Randall Thor. You won't melt if you cry." "I don't have time for tears either, Min," he said gently. "Sometimes the hounds catch the wolf and wish they hadn't. Sometimes he turns on them or waits in ambush. But first the wolf has to run."
"When do we go?" she asked. She did not let go of his hair. She was never going to let go of him.
"Never."